Welcome to Cranford Radio. We have a very special guest today, Rabbi Sidney Shankin. Rabbi Shankin was at Temple Beth El from 1957 to about 1979, 1980. And just yesterday, Martin Luther King Day, I had the opportunity to come across an article that talked about Rabbi Shankin's involvement with the Freedom Riders back in the early 1960s and Martin Luther King Jr. Rabbi Shankin, thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. My honor.
Well, first of all, Rabbi Shankin, tell me a little bit about your involvement with the Freedom Riders. 1960s, most of us maybe have read about some of that in the history books. Not too many of us have any recollection ourselves of that time. But you, even more than having a recollection, you were a participant. Tell me a little bit, if you would, about what that was like and why you became involved, please.
Well, I grew up in the South, in San Antonio, Texas, and I saw discrimination, and it shocked me. I was very angry about it. But what could I do? After the war, I went to school in New York, of course, at the rabbinical school, and after the ordination, I got a position in New Jersey. So I was removed from that horrible discrimination, persecution they had of the blacks down south. But I kept reading about Martin Luther King and his movement to gain civil rights for the blacks. And I was very moved by it. So I was sitting in my office one day. I just saw an impulse called Newark. Well, one of the movements, anyhow. And I asked them, what the hell do you do? They said, come join us. So I went down, and I joined them. And we had they give you tests how to be nonviolent. You sit at a counter, and they come, and they curse you, and do everything, and you're supposed to just take it. And different things. I graduated. So I went to Irv Weiss, the president of the synagogue, and I told him I was going to go on a freedom ride. So he said, have you spoken to the board? I said, no, I didn't. I don't want to go to the board. The board should always say no. I'm not going to ask for permission. I think I should go. It's my duty as a rabbi, as a Jew. Anyhow, he said, okay, good for you. I gave him the name of two rabbis to cover for me in case of an emergency. And I went to Newark, and six of us went on Freedom Rides from New York into the South. I was arrested once, I remember. Interesting. We were speaking different churches, and black churches, and encouraged them to register to vote. And I gave the same speech every time, and every time it had the same effect. It's amazing. You see people's eyes, how words can change people's eyes. They're never the same afterwards. That's a separate topic. Someday I'll tell you about that. But I was arrested once, and for crossing a line, the policeman said, if you cross this line, you'll be arrested. Well, I crossed the line, and he said, follow me. And on the way to the jail, I said, excuse me, officer, I think it's the number 647 or something. Why am I being arrested? Well, once I identified a person, it's amazing. I identified him. And he said, all right, I'll let you go this time, but don't do it again. Let me go. So I went back. I often found that once you I remember once we came out of a restaurant, and there were cars there, and a bunch of young guys standing with the hates there. So I walked over to the cars. I took down a few license numbers. They didn't bother us after that. Once you identify people, they become not so bold. But anyway, when I got back, was the greatest moment of my life, I think. There was a board meeting. They called a special board meeting, obviously. And the synagogue, it was amazing. I went to the synagogue, and it was the synagogue library. The library was... The members of the board were sitting at a table, long table, but there were the library was full of members of the synagogue. And I looked outside, it went all the way down into the street for the people of the congregation showed up in mass. So the board It's very interesting. The board ended up, well, they asked the other two questions. Who are you representing, Rabbi? I said, I'm representing Judaism. Questions like that. But they were not hostile. In fact, they ended up by congratulating me, thanking me, and had a motion, they passed a motion to put it into the newspaper, the local newspaper. So the power of people, the people in Cranford were so strong, so beautiful. It was the greatest moment of my life, I think, when they stood up like that and stood up for their rabbi. It was wonderful. And I loved Cranford. Obviously, my sixth year, they gave me a sabbatical for the seventh year. I took my family to Israel. Then I came back. They gave me a lifetime contract. They were just so wonderful. I never worked there a day. It was just a pleasure every day. I enjoyed so much every day.
Did you have a chance to meet Dr. King, and what was that like if you did have the opportunity to meet him?
Oh, yes. I met him on several occasions. Three I can think of. Birmingham. We called it Birmingham. I'll never forget him sitting there in the sun in a straight chair out in the courtyard, and the reporters all around questioning him. And he was so cool in both senses of the word, with the sun pouring down on him. And he spoke so eloquently and cool. He was really an inspiration. The man was a genius. He came to my motel room in the colored motel, and I had other rabbis there. I'd gone down my second time there with 18 rabbis, conservative rabbis. They met in my room, and King spoke to the rabbis. I'll never forget that talk. He thanked us for coming, of course, and but he spoke of Martin Buber's philosophy, of I Thou philosophy, a very profound, beautiful philosophy. He spoke so knowledgeably about it. Then I remember later seeing him speak in the church, the 13th Avenue Church, and he could speak their language. He spoke the black dialect. He spoke both languages with equal facility. He's an amazing man, brilliant man. The march in Selma. I went to, when he tried to cross the bridge in Selma because he wanted to go to
Montgomery.
And he had to cross the bridge. But it was against the law for blacks to walk on the bridge. So he led a group, and they were beaten, many since the hospital, really beaten terribly by the people. So he tried again the second time. This time he turned back. He saw they were going to really hurt the people, violently hurt the people. But he sent out a help, an appeal for help. And that's when I went down. They were armed, locked in arms, walking across the bridge. And we had federal soldiers that protecting us this time. I was in the back. But I'll never forget his eyes. I still see the eyes of Reverend King. They were full of fear. And now, I'm a World War II veteran, combat veteran. I've seen eyes like that before of men that are frightened. But every time I saw those eyes, they were doing what they had to do. King was doing what he wanted to do in spite of fear. And this is a hero. A man who has no fear is not a hero. He's lacking in the emotion. Something is lacking in him. But Reverend King knew that this was dangerous. And yet, he stood straight and he walked straight across that bridge. And I fell in love with that man. Such a courageous hero. That's a hero. And he gave us all straight. We all followed him across. And we got across with no incident. It was a beautiful, beautiful moment. And I saw on many occasions, I heard him speak. He would inspire the people with the way he spoke. It was amazing. the 13th Avenue Church in Birmingham. I spoke to them. I gave the same speech I gave 100 times. I had the same reaction. Also, you can see people's eyes change. I would say something to the effect that I'm a white man, that's obvious. But I want to say something that you also know, but you have to hear it from me, a white man. You are as good as I am. Your mother is as good, as beautiful, as wonderful as my mother. Your children as darling as my children. Your wife as lovely as my wife. And you're as much a man as I am, and maybe even more. But you got to prove it. You got to go register to vote. Because it's better to walk on your 2 feet for 5 minutes than to crawl on your hands and knees for the rest of your life. And you see, men's eyes would change. It's amazing. And they were never the same afterwards. However it affected them, those words reached them, for good or bad. They affected them. And I had a wonderful moment of being a hero, too. People, the children especially, came. I had to sign their autograph. I'm signing autographs. And I remember the little girls, they had their Sunday school notebooks there, and I would sign their notebooks, my name. Three weeks later, the church was bombed on Sunday and burned to the ground, and 7 little girls died.
Wow.
And their notebook that I signed was burned. So don't be proud of being a hero. It was the most terrible moment of my life.
Well, obviously, you came back to Cranford after that experience, and you were still in Cranford in 1968 when Dr. King was tragically assassinated. What was that like in Cranford? Do you remember what the reaction was in Cranford in 1968 following Dr. King's assassination?
Well, yeah, we were shocked. Shocked. We were shocked. I can't tell you. People were so upset. People really wept. I wept, too, I'll admit it. Yeah, it was a terrible... I had no words to express how we felt. Because the people in Cranford respected me and agreed with me for doing it. In fact, on one of the freedom rides, Bert Goodman, the member of the board of the City Council, went with me. And it was interesting because he was also the mayor of Cranford. Bert Goodman.
Mm-hmm.
He went on a freedom ride with me. And we flew there. We went there to hear a speech. And the president of the synagogue went with me. And this is how the people in Cranford were. It's amazing. I spoke in every church in Cranford because of this, including the Catholic Church. I'll never forget this book in the sisterhood. There were 300 women there. I started with saying, I'm just saying, I was the only man there. I said, I used to be a minority, but this is ridiculous. It broke them up. Then they received it so well. The people were behind the freedom marchers, no question about it. I remember the mayor calling across the street, Rabbi Shankin. He waved to me. I walked down the street. It was a wonderful feeling. The people, but his death shocked us. But we became used to it. You have to remember that the president was also assassinated, and his brother was assassinated. There are so many assassinations, it's hard to believe it, in the United States.
Quite a time, and of course the Vietnam War was underway at that time as well. And speaking of wars, you are part of the Greatest Generation. You mentioned it in passing that you were involved in World War II. Tell me just a bit about your World War II experiences, please.
Yeah, I was first year of college. I think I was 19. I came home one Sunday night from the movie. Hey, Shaggy, you hear they bombed Pearl Harbor? I never heard of Pearl Harbor before. If I did, I didn't know it. Anyhow, the next day, I went to enlist. There were two lines as far as you can see, and I got in the right line. I enlisted to the Air. If you enlist, you can choose what you want to do. So I enlisted to the Air Corps. Army Air, it was the Army Air Corps in those days. And I became a bombardier navigator. Bombardier, then I went to school again, became a navigator. Then went to gunnery school, became a gunner. So that was my... So I went overseas to... I'm telling you very, very quickly. It took over a year. I went overseas and Italy. It was Sicily first. And I did... And then we moved up to Italy. And I did my 25 missions. You do 25 missions, you're finished. It's a tour. You've done your tour. And they reassign you to a desk job or to an instructor or send you back to the States. You're no more, you're not required to do more flights. Because actually, the pilot was the only one in my crew that didn't get hurt. The one who was killed, the rest were wounded. In different flights, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But then after my 25th mission, I volunteered for another tour. So I flew another 25 missions. And then after that, I was still alive. I was surprised. So I volunteered for a third tour. There's no such thing as a third tour. Nobody ever, in the 12th Air Force, nobody ever survived a third tour. And, just, they call it a fly till you die. Fortunately, at the fourth mission, my 54th mission, I was wounded and was in the hospital for 4 months. Then they sent me back to the States. This time, reassigned me to I was squadron bombardier in Florence, South Carolina. But on the way there, I had the worst experience of my life, I think. I was navigating this B-25 across the ocean, South Atlantic. I navigated across the ocean, but on the way there, about 500 miles from South America, we hit a hurricane, and we couldn't fly over it, around it, or under it. So the pilot said, give me a heading to the Bahamas. I said, the other direction. I said, we haven't got enough fuel for that. He said, we'll do the best we can. And you have to picture this, the lightning, the thunder, the waves of the ocean, the white waves, and the shipping, our plane was thrown around like a cork in water. And we were just thrown around in violent. And I sat down on the floor and just waited to die. I waited to fall into the water. I was sure, absolutely sure, this is it. I know how it feels to have you put your head in the guillotine hole and wait for the blade to come down. I just waited for the blade to come down. It was absolutely certain I was going to die because I knew how much fuel we had. We can't go any further. And it's interesting. I tell you this because people should know this. I never felt so free in my life. I have absolutely, nature protects you. I felt completely wonderful. I felt good. I felt, they call this in the Kabbalah, the Jewish mysticism, they call it Hanashika. God embraces you, and you feel wonderful. I remember, it sounds funny, I don't have to floss my teeth anymore. I'm free from everything. The body makes such demands on us, we don't realize it. I'm free. I felt good.
Wow.
And then the pilot said, look, and there was a hole in the cloud. It sounds like a bad movie, but there was a hole in the cloud, like a tunnel. Flew through it. I gave the pilot a heading to Natal, Brazil, and we came in 00. That means right on course, right on time. We made an emergency landing in the landing strip, and I swear to God, it's true. We taxied for just a minute, and putt, both engines went out.
Wow.
If we had been in the air a minute or two more, we would have crashed into the water. It's a miracle I'm here.
What an experience.
I started singing Yiddish Mama. And somebody says, da 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 da. And we start laughing. We refused to continue our journey. Now I think about it, it stands up on the back of my neck.
Wow.
That was funny. Isn't that something? That's such an experience. And then when I came back, I went to Florence, South Carolina, as I said. And I got tired of a desk job, so I volunteered to go to Pacific. And they put me on the B-29. I'm navigating to go to the Pacific. And thank God he dropped the bomb. So we got to Florence, California, and turned back and came back. Turned around.
Wow, what a lifetime of experiences. Rabbi Shankin, for those of you who are listening to this who remember your time at Temple Beth El, why don't you give us just a little bit of an update as to what you're doing today, please?
Well, now, first of all, now you know I'm a little mashuga. What am I doing now? I'm retired, and what I do is I had some classes, and I taught some classes in the synagogue, but I'm too old for that now. I can't teach anymore. It's hard to remember, so I stopped teaching. I'm attending a nature club, which I enjoy. My wife is in a choral group, which I go with her and enjoy that. And it's mostly social, and we travel to see the world. We've been to Alaska, to Israel, of course, many times. Oh, yeah, while I was in Cranford, I bought an apartment in Israel, Jerusalem, and also an automobile. So we used to go there at least once a year, my family. And then we lived in our own apartment in Jerusalem and drove around in my own car. It was wonderful. I felt Israeli for 3 months a year, two or three months. And also, I went to a conservative synagogue that didn't have a rabbi, so I served there as a rabbi for a couple of months. And my wife, who likes to dance, taught folk dancing to the people there and to handicapped people, mentally handicapped, and things of that nature. I keep busy.
Well, it certainly sounds like it. And again, thank you for sharing your amazing stories with us. I'm sure there are many people in Cranford that are going to be thrilled to hear from you. And thank you so much for what you did in the war, as well as in the 60s, and your time of service here at Temple Beth El in Cranford. And Rabbi Shankin, thank you again so much for being part of our conversation this afternoon.
Well, thank you for your interest and your time. I enjoyed talking to you.